The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Friday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. It's our final day at the South Point, y'all. How you doing, Kelly?
A little sad.
Yeah.
A little happy.
Melancholy.
Friday.
It's melancholy. Raining outside.
Yeah, it's raining.
Apropos.
Yeah, it's been raining all morning or all night. I don't know. It was raining when I went to bed last night.
Supposed to rain most of the weekend.
What is this?
I don't know.
I moved out here for.
What is this, the East Coast?
Yeah, come on.
We will pay tribute, final tribute to the South Point later in the show. Chrissy Andrews, Vinny Maliulo will join us. Nothing will change, by the way. We're not going anywhere. Let me just point that out. Nothing will change on your end. Fine, ladies and gentlemen, listeners of this show and this network.
Yeah, especially if you listen to us every day and don't watch.
especially if you listen to us. Absolutely nothing will change. It's just that we've been here 6.5 years. So we're gonna talk to Chrissy and Vinny at the end of the show today. We have a lot of college football today. Pete Futak will join us from collegefootballnews.com. The Bear, Chris Felica from Fox Sports will join us to talk college football, as will Dr. Bob, his first weekly appearance in earnest for this season in college football, but beyond his season win total. Zach Cohen on the U.S. Open. I split mine again yesterday. Was looking for the clean sweep. Sasha Vickery up 4-3. Had two break points to go up 5-3 in the third set yesterday, and she squanders them and she loses.
Got a nice win out of Mo, though, right?
Michael Mo.
I was walking around the house, had that on the TV. I saw, what was he, down two sets, right?
He was down two sets, but that was part of the handicap, though. You know, like, Isner will tire at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, but then Isner sort of got a second wind. He already announced before the tournament, this is my last tournament, so everybody knew this was, if he loses, he loses. And this is the end of his 17-year tennis career, where he spent a lot of it in the top 20, got as high as number 8 in the world, 16 titles, but had the misfortune, again, his only crime, being born at the same time as Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal, and Novak Djokovic. But he ends his career, so we split again yesterday. I have one pick in tennis, and we'll get Zach Cohen's pick coming up. At the U.S. Open as the third round begins today. And who did I leave out? Oh, Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke, of course, in Southern Cali, talking baseball with us on the heels of a Dodgers-Braves game. Boy, that got tight last night late. Braves end up beating the Dodgers 8-7. We got to talk about Strider and the Cy Young here momentarily, because this, to me, is fascinating. Fascinating how, because this is going to be such a referendum on baseball card stat, one baseball card stat versus every other stat, what has manifested in advanced metrics and what is yet to manifest. Well, matter of fact, let's just go into that now. Which is to say that, first of all, should we even, I want to say, but we have three college football guests. So let me just say about college football last night. I just want to throw a curveball on this because I want to point this out. Live betting opportunity last night on UCF. Ridiculous, right? UCF, they could just name their score against Kent State. I had an in-game 55.5 that just eked in there.
Yeah, you went over. I did lay the points with UCF.
You could have done that over and over and over.
Yeah, you really could. So I hit it when they were up 14-0. Like, it was very obvious. And, you know, credit to Tim Murray, right? Came on here yesterday.
Yep.
I was not aware Kent State didn't have a single returning starter on offense. And, what the defense got gashed. What was it, like 700 yards or something like that?
That final touchdown, though, came. UCF just absolutely rolls Kent State. UCF, it came down to, will the clock run out or will they score one more time? And they scored one more time, and so they roll Kent State.
723 yards is what UCF put up last night.
723 yards. And, I mean, that again, we just want to emphasize the in-game opportunities that present themselves in college football. They're so apparent, and we can do all the talking we want beforehand. Sometimes the best betting opportunities are the most brain-dead ones when you just start watching a college football game. The mark, first of all, and then Nebraska and Minnesota was just utter dreck. Minnesota ends up beating Nebraska. I don't know how. Nebraska with a final insult pick with just over a minute left. And Minnesota ends up winning it on a field goal at the end. 13-10. Barn burner.
Yeah, I think I flipped over to that one. It was second quarter, 3-0, and I think an audible groan just came out of me, and I switched the channel. I was like, oh, Big Ten football. I'm changing.
Yeah. And then I guess what was considered the marquee matchup of the night was Florida and Utah. And if Utah wins it 24-11, that was a pre-flop under for many of us, where we're just sort of like, I got talked into it. I can take no credit myself for that. I got talked into that, which is, it felt like Utah just sort of rolled into that one. Florida had a moment in the first half where you're like, oh, maybe Graham Mertz and these guys down 7-3, maybe they won't get rolled in this game. But they gave a bunch of big plays. The two quarterback attack from Utah dominated. It could be a very, very dicey year again for Billy Napier over there at Florida. We'll talk to you again, Futak, Felica, and of course, Dr. Bob about all this. About the game last night, because I know a lot of people are like, oh, we're going to talk Cy Young again. I'm not going to go into it. Well, yeah, maybe I will, because I think the referendum in the Cy Young award is so going to be so fascinating. We are, after all, handicapping what the voters will do in an NL Cy Young. Will they care about ERA? And if they do, last night in the 8-7, Braves went over the Dodgers. Spencer Strider went 6 innings, gave up 4 earned runs, 9 Ks, 2 walks. So a typical Spencer Strider thing, in which his whip remains very good, his strikeout rate remains very good, but he gives up 4 earned runs in 6 innings on a Mookie Betts wall scraper, maybe even a glove scraping 3-run Jimmy Jack. That was the big moment of that ball game. At DraftKings, Blake Snell is plus 100, Spencer Strider is plus 180. If you go to FanDuel, Strider is close to $4, I believe, in this. So I went through the other day how, to me, we compared it to Zach Gallen that day more than to Blake Snell, but now that Blake Snell is the favorite. Strider, you know, again, 38% K rate off the charts. His K minus walk rate is 30.4. That's better than the K rates of all but 3 starters in MLB. Third best ground ball rate. Second best expected ERA. Number one in fielding independent. Number one in XFIP. 4.8 WAR. Second, according to FanGraphs. What are we even talking about? But I am the first to admit, and I've said this before on this show, that if your ERA trickle, if it still starts to seep upwards, voters are going to be influenced by such a thing. So his ERA went from 3.46 to 3.56 last night with that performance. And my very arbitrary number is, I think if you get into the 3.3s, then ERA doesn't become a thing. And he was trending in that direction, and I think he will again. So your bets come down to, what do you think will matter, and maybe even more important, what do you think will manifest between now and the end of the season? Because Spencer Strider did get the win last night. So that's, if you want to give me ERA, Blake Snell's ERA is almost a run better. Almost a run better than Strider's at this point. Not his expected ERA, because Strider, in all the real skill set categories, is a much more dominant pitcher. But what do you think will manifest between now and the end of the year? And that's where this becomes such an interesting bet. Do you believe in analytics manifesting between now and the end of the year, that small runway that still exists, still about 5 starts? Or do you think this Blake Snell magic carpet ride is going to continue? Now, why do I call it a magic carpet ride with Blake Snell? Because if you look at Blake Snell's numbers, he has, in addition to his great ERA of 2.6, he has the highest walk rate in all of Major League Baseball, 13.7%. He has the highest walks per nine, 5.13. So you say to yourself, how does this guy who has this gaudy walk rate, how could he possibly be the Cy Young? How could he possibly have this ERA? Well, I'll tell you why. 2 reasons. By the way, his expected ERA, 3.96. Like ordinary schmordinary. But how is he able to have this worst walk rate and worst walks per nine rate in all of Major League Baseball and still have this amazing ERA? 2 reasons. One, a 2.67 BABIP, which is about the 4th or 5th most fortunate in all of baseball. And here's the real stat, Kelly. Blake Snell is Houdini. He has an 85.7% strand rate. 85.7% is LOB rate, left on base. So I, who have, for those of us baseball geeks who have had our nose in fan graphs for years, decades, when I see 85.7%, I immediately think, wait a minute, what's the highest strand rate in the history of Major League Baseball in a season? And the answer is...
just period?
Any season of qualified starters.
Okay.
The Candyman, John Candelaria, of the Pittsburgh Pirates in 1977 for the Buccos, 88.8%. Snell's is 85.7%.
Wow.
So the people who have Snell tickets, they don't want to talk about the walk rate, right? Because he has this amazing strand rate. So listen, if he gets through the season still as this Houdini, and Strider's ERA is 3.5, whatever it is, let's say it stays the same, there's a case. But if Strider goes down to 3.3 and this walk slash strand rate thing actually regresses, and we see after one start how voters immediately, how the market changes over a course of four or five starts now between the end of the season, this is what you're betting on. This is what you're betting on. That's why if FanDuel, you can get like plus, what is it, plus 380 on Strider right now? I got to check what the updated number is.
390.
390. Even better. You got to make that bet. And he got through the Dodgers now. Was it a net positive for Snell bettors yesterday? Probably incrementally, because the ERA went up from 3.46 to 3.56 for Strider. But I hope all of that makes sense, that what you're betting on is, yes, what will the voters care about in the end, but even more so, and this is why you try to get ahead of this, what will manifest in this last month? Do you think that the runway is long enough for the Snell thing to finally meet its truth? And do you think Strider, in the end, if he ends up with like a 3.35 ERA and all these other things are gaudy as heck, by the way, I don't see how you can't vote for him. So to me, you got a plus 390 available to you? Oh, man, I'd bet it all day long. I'd bet anything in plus. I really would. Spencer Strider, the most dominant pitcher in all of baseball. We'll see if he wins the Cy Young, but he does have to get that ERA down. I will even acknowledge that myself. Let's begin the college football cavalcade on the other side. Pete Futek from College Football News. Next, Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The updated NFL betting guide is out now. Throughout the NFL preseason, the VSiN experts have been reevaluating every team to give you the betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide will have picks from every on-air host. Not will have, it has. Team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits, and football contest strategies. If you want the best and most comprehensive collection of picks, predictions, and previews, and I know you do, now's the time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber for as low as $19 or save 50% off the monthly price with an annual subscription and bet smarter all year long. Sign up today at vsin.com/subscribe. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin here as well. I don't know if it was too early in the season for the announcers to be at full bore. Also, if you watch this this UConn-NC State game yesterday, boy, those announcers were rough. Here's
still going after announcers.
I'm not giving you any names on this one because I don't know their names, but it was like, and it's a touchdown and he's shy. Like that's in one sentence, right? In one thing. Even Chris Fowler wasn't in prime midseason form. Like there was a fumble. Florida fumbled the ball forward on one key play or what appeared at the time to be a key play in the first half. And he's like, it's out of bounds. So, and he was saying it'll move the chains. Like, no, it goes back to where, what is he watching? So,
that's a little
and he's great, right? Yeah, so that was odd. So it was just way early in the college football season for everybody at this point.
Hey, did you catch this morning that the ACC is going to add their 23rd and 24th members?
I know people are fascinated by this story, but there's no betting implication for me. And I grew up in the Mid-Atlantic where I grew up on ACC basketball and North Carolina and Duke and Virginia and Maryland and all those schools, NC State. And it was just the greatest place to grow for college basketball. And now the notion, first of all, I can't even remember that Maryland's in the Big Ten when I see them now, right? Because it's so ingrained in me.
Good luck with Cal.
But now Cal and Stanford are in the ACC. What? I don't even recognize this
Atlantic
world.
Atlantic Coast Conference, baby.
I don't even know what we're doing. Maybe Pete Futek could shed some light. From collegefootballnews.com, he joins us now from the heartland. How you doing, Peter?
I'm doing just fine. Yeah, I get it. If you're looking at this as a fan, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but like in the business side of this, expand or die. And look, the Big Ten showed what you need to do. You need markets, even if it doesn't quite make sense from a fan standpoint. And so I get it. Look, you know Stanford and Cal as well as I do, and the fan bases and the lack of interest and all that stuff. But look, you know, it worked for the Big Ten to at least say they have a footprint in the, you know, the New York, New Jersey area with Rutgers and with the BWI area with Maryland. Now, you know, the ACC's got, what, the fourth or fifth largest media market in the country? Smart move.
How does this help us win money, Pete? That's what I'm really looking for. How does this help us win money?
Of course it is. By the way, I'm with you because Chris Fowler is my favorite. I am a unabashed fanboy of his when it comes to the work he does. Seems like his heart was a little bit New York. It seems like he wants to go call tennis already.
I agree.
With that call.
That's true.
And the other weird thing I thought, Gus Johnson yells at weird times. Like, all of a sudden, you had these unbelievable moments in this game last night that did nothing for 55 minutes, and then you're not going to see a better touchdown catch. You're not going to see a bigger moment than that interception. You're not going to see a bigger, and he kind of like plays it straight when you have these gigantic moments, and you have one guy scramble for 3 yards. Whoa, look at the Matt Rhule era is back.
Weird
call.
I'll say this, and we'll get your thoughts on anything that you've gleaned so far, but I will say this about Gus Johnson. Again, back in the day when he started, go back to that Adam Morrison, Gonzaga, UCLA upset, famous game back in the day.
Yeah.
Him and Len Elmore, it was like a sports broadcasting opera. They couldn't have been more fabulous. And he was great back then, both football and basketball. But I have felt since those early years, he's doing a caricature of himself almost, right? Like he's got to live up to this thing.
Yeah, and when he does play it right, when it's real, when it's really on, he is still very, very good. But you're right. It was just an odd call. You're right. Everyone's just kind of get going. We're just getting started. It's not even, the week one Saturday yet. Everyone's getting their sea legs under them. But, I thought it was underwhelming, too, last night with all these big calls.
Biggest takeaway from week zero or what you saw last night would be?
I still want to see, let's keep this to the betting aspect of this. I still want to see a bigger sample size when it comes to the play clock and who's doing it. I thought, Nebraska, Minnesota played like a normal college game. I thought that was going to be the game that really sort of showed everyone what the new play clock rules were going to do, because usually if Minnesota was Minnesota, a team that was great at running the ball, one of the best in the country on third down, lived for time of possession, I assumed that last night they were going to do that, and they threw the ball 40 times. So we didn't really see how this is going to work when you've got a team that can just ground and pound. Maybe Michigan, maybe an Army. I'm still waiting to see, one of these good running teams go on like a 14-minute drive with how these new rules are set up and how that's going to affect unders, how that's going to affect totals and at the end of the half. Just all the different betting implications. We're going to need a couple weeks to see what teams and how this new rule really matters, because if you saw this week, just about every total went dropped. As soon as you started to see what happened, all the totals, usually there's a couple that went up, like the big one, like South Carolina, North Carolina, but everything else started to fall a little bit, and I'm still waiting to see how the betting public reacts to these new rules and how everyone adjusts to them.
Unders were 7-4 in college football yesterday. Okay, what is your favorite bet or bets of the weekend moving forward now?
I'm going to throw two your way. One, look, let's go over. I don't see how North Carolina, South Carolina is anything less than a shootout. North Carolina, their offense died late last year, but they still don't have a defense. You have Drake May. You have Spencer Rattler. You're going to have two passing games that I think are going to trade shots all game long. I love the over on the point total on that. And the other one, and I point this out, and I've got my 10 best six of the week piece up. I kind of pointed out 9 of the last 10 Labor Day Monday night games have been double-digit rough blows. There's been one that was 11-point win, but they've been blowouts. They've been ugly. They've been, what's going to happen here. I think this Duke team is really good. I think they're going to be, Riley Leonard is a true NFL prospect. And Clemson's just going to come in and wipe them out, and it's going to be midway through Labor Day night, and it's going to be the Clemson show. I will be shocked if Clemson doesn't cover the spread relatively easy on this one, because that defense is absolutely loaded with next-level guys.
What about the marquee matchup this weekend? Sunday night, the only game between two top 10 teams, LSU and Florida State, LSU favored by 2.5. Where do you come down on that?
I've been barking about this for 8 months. I can't stop now. So even with a couple of key suspensions, if he misses LSU, I will happily pivot if Florida State comes in and rocks them and becomes this big giant thing. But it gets lost in what Florida State did at the end of last year that everyone's been gushing over. They only beat one team over that final stretch to finish with a winning record. That was Syracuse. Florida didn't have a winning record. Oklahoma in the bowl game, it finished 6-7. You know, so it was good, and they struggled with that Oklahoma team that was a shadow of itself. And they're talented, certainly across the board. They upgraded with a good group of parts from the transfer portal. But LSU, they're in that other tier. They're not quite Georgia or Ohio State. It's that highest of levels, but they're not far off. Florida State, I think, is a little half step behind. I'm actually taking this to another step and saying, for all the gushing over Florida State, I kind of think they're more likely to start 2-2. They got to go to Clemson in a few weeks than they are to start 3-1 or 4-0 and be this monster in the college football playoff. So LSU would be my other one right now. It's only 2.5, and I'm kind of happy with that.
All right, last question. I've been asking this of everybody, not only this week, but all summer. Colorado. Where do you, do you have a feel for them? How do you think this? They're 20.5 point dogs against TCU. Obviously, the way Deion handled the transition was of much report, was much a much news story this whole summer. It just dominated the news, and I'll be honest with you, it rubbed me wrong. I know I'll be like, oh, you got to put in the good players. You got to have, this is the way to do it. You got to be a man about it. I didn't love it. And I sort of find myself not rooting for him. How do you think this goes?
Honestly, I'm on the complete flip side. Look, 95% of college football is having the guys, and you can't win. It's how it works. This is the world of college football. You've got to get the best players in there, and they went from having nobody to guys. Travis Hunter might be the best corner in college football. It's hard getting his own kid, but Shedeur Sanders is an NFL quarterback. They've got Power Five guys across the board. I don't think it's going to blow up and they're going to all of a sudden be this monster team. I do like them with the 20 against TCU, even though TCU is very good. But I kind of think Colorado is going to be a little better than I would think, except overall, the schedule is a bear.
Yep, it is. And I'm not saying they aren't going to have success. I'm sure they will at some point, but we'll see how this goes from the get on this with Colorado and Deion Sanders. Pete Futak from College Football News. We'll talk to Bob, Dr. Bob and Chris Felica later on the college game. We'll come back. Zach Cohen on tennis. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get rewarded before you ever place a bet with a G-Bank Visa Signature Card. Unlike other credit cards that decline sports betting transactions or treat them as a cash advance, the G-Bank Visa, that's the G-Bank Visa Signature Card, can load directly to your favorite sportsbook apps. You'll earn a 1% cash rewards on gaming and sports app loads every time and 2% on other purchases. G-Bank Visa is a card designed for gaming and sports fans everywhere and works with apps like DraftKings, BetMGM, and Caesars. To learn more, go to g.bank/VSiN. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from the South Point Hotel Casino, tip of the strip. Our final show here, our final day here as a network. By the way, let's thank all the guys downstairs who we're taking everybody with us, right?
We're taking everybody with us.
Because the equipment is sparse in the studio.
Sean's just going to. This is a practical joke.
Sorry,
Sean.
Sean.
Come here Monday.
Sorry, Sean.
Tuesday.
It's been a good run, Sean.
Just wait for us.
All right, we'll take Sean.
Okay.
We're just kidding, Sean. Robert Moreno downstairs. Isaiah. Von Vrinkel.
A million people that have worked on this show over the years. Today we got a couple fill-ins, Dakota and Reggie downstairs, but they've worked on this show plenty of times as well.
What's happening, Reggie? All these guys are going to fit in that very small booth where we're going. All of them, right on top of each other.
Sean and Kevin are literally going to sit on each other's laps now.
Outstanding. again, nothing will change on your end, but Chrissy and Vinny here to pay tribute to the South Point here at the end of the show today. 2,000 of these I've done. 2,000. By the way, we get tweets at Beating the Book.
Studio's filling up too, Gil.
Is filling up. What are all these people doing here?
We're going to see management that I haven't seen before since COVID.
Something special happened here?
Before that existed.
we get tweets at Beating the Book. Tweets have always been a great part of this show, and I it is not often that you, I often cite this, there's a Woody Allen movie well before your time, Kelly, called Annie Hall. And there's an argument in a movie line. They used to wait in line to go see a movie back in the day, an actual theater. And Woody Allen's overhearing this conversation. It's driving him crazy because he's neurotic and he disagrees with everything the person's saying. And he's like, if only I could, you know, and he pulls, they were talking about media or something. He pulls Marshall McLuhan, who's like a media expert from behind a curtain. And Marshall McLuhan says to the people that Woody Allen is disagreeing with in his head, you know nothing of what you speak. You know nothing of my work. And Woody Allen neurotically turns to the camera and says, if only life could be like this, right? So guess what just happened with us? Because we read tweets.
Yeah.
And we were talking about Cy Young and all that stuff, and I've often noted the Tom Tango Cy Young tracker.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who just tweeted into the show?
Who?
Tom Tango.
No way!
Yes. He's our Marshall McLuhan. So Tom Tango said, here's the latest and greatest, as well, he goes, ignore relievers, as always. That's right. All those people talk about relievers winning this stuff. Please stop. But he says, Cy Young predictor, it's important to not only use current Cy Young points gained, but also future Cy points expected. You need both. In the AL, he says it's down to four pitchers, with Sonny Gray now joining the FIP party. In the NL, Steele is now ahead of Gallen. Justin Steele has moved ahead of Zach Gallen in his Cy Young tracker. And it's all about Snell and Strider. And he says with Snell, it's all about that FIP. Yet Strider has the number one fielding independent in all of baseball. So I wonder what he's referring to there. We should write him. We should text him back. I will. I'll be like, what do you mean by that? We'll get the answer from him. But isn't that nice when someone who has nailed the Cy Young winner 7 of the last 12, going back the last 6 years, both American League and National League, that he texts into the show. And we appreciate that. Tom Tango, one of the pioneers. He invented fielding independent pitching, by the way, and also is responsible for the most reliable run expectancy matrix in baseball analytics.
That is awesome. Yeah, we referenced a bunch of his stuff earlier in the book when we were talking about.
I'm going to ask him for that. What he means by that. We also get tweets from others who have been so great to this show. Phil Weiss was talking about, he was saying, I'm sorry, Gil, but a guy with a 3.56 ERA should not get the Cy. Snell is almost a full run less, which is what I said and what I've been saying about the ERA with Strider. He's got to get it below 3.4. And he goes, I know you have. He's just sort of covering his bases with both bets now. The highest ERA to ever win a Cy Young, 3.51, Roger Clemens. Remember, he won 20 games. By the way, that's the other thing I didn't mention in the first segment. Because Strider got the win yesterday, 4 or 5 more starts. And yes, someone with Johnny Solid was wondering, hey, do you think the Braves will sit him down the stretch? Not if the Dodgers are within contact for the best record in all of baseball, because again, the Dodgers and Braves have played each other 4 out of the last 6 years in the playoffs, and the Dodgers have beaten them 3 out of those 4 times. So the Braves have a Dodgers problem in the postseason. They want home field. So as long as it's close, Strider will go, not maybe the whole way, but he'll get about 5 more starts. But he's got 16 wins. He can get to 20. You want to talk about like baseball card stats that will matter to voters?
Exactly.
Like that too.
Wins and strikeouts, like you just referenced with Clemens, like wins and strikeouts, it makes it a lot easier to swallow that the big ERA.
Eric Biggio from William Hill has texted in. Just a reminder, because it is September 1st, Nevada Gaming makes us take down the MLB award markets today. Apologize for the inconvenience. Gas up the car for a trip to the Arizona border, he says. It's nice with Tom Tango and Eric Biggio. Text in or tweet in.
Yeah, that was a great tweet and a great heads up for those of us here in Nevada this morning.
If you're thinking about adding, because I added Strider last night and didn't even think, I added plus 225 last night, didn't even think that was my last shot to do it.
Yeah, I mean.
Didn't even think about it.
You know me, I'm not exactly doing a ton of MLB awards betting year in, year out, but yeah, I mean, I put in my Strider bets earlier this week, so good to know. Don't have that chance anymore.
I probably should save these for later in the show, but teasers and parlays. In honor of the last show at the South Point and feeling nostalgic, here's an accidental screenshot from the last primetime action show in 2022. I thought it may come in handy one day. Enjoyed all the memories of the South Point. Rick Ollier. While Vitamin C graduation song plays in the background, he says, and over there is where the AC went out for a week. And that chair is where Kelly told everyone he could chug a gallon of eggnog. And that chair is where the producer where producer 6 sat for 2 weeks. Gonna miss this place.
Okay, gallon. Never mind.
He's just talking about
half gallon. I did. Okay, let's not say I told. I did it.
Matt Brown yet kicked that field goal?
Nah.
Stephen Vegas.
Keep those tweets coming.
Seems like the local rain here in Vegas is a way of protesting you guys leaving the South Point. I thought about coming down there this morning, but not with these legendary bad inclement weather drivers out here. Enjoy your final show at the tip of the strip. Thank you. And again, Chrissy and Vinny here later on the show. We're not going anywhere. We're just leaving this studio and going elsewhere. Well, we'll try to make new memories. Sure. One thing I want to talk about with baseball is we did an exercise, not once, but twice earlier this summer, about 3 weeks ago, I want to say was the last time of the two, where we went through the baseball reference numbers and the Fangraphs numbers of like what might constitute a good bet. And every time I talked about it, I said, if you believe the baseball reference numbers in one case, if you believe the Fangraphs numbers in another case. You may recall at the time it was like, oh, well, if you believe this baseball reference percentage of winning the division on the Texas Rangers, betting the Rangers to win the division might be a good bet based on the odds at the time, the betting odds at the time. Now, you may recall I didn't agree with that because, yes, I have the Rangers season win total over, but I always thought the Astros would win this division. So the baseball reference, I don't know that we're going to do that exercise anymore because I think those two reference and fan graphs are so locked into their pre-flop numbers that they somehow can't get back into reality on it. Because I think that exercise, if anything, might have led bettors astray. So they liked the Rangers to win the division at baseball reference based on the numbers at the time. They liked, what was the other one that was off? Oh, they liked, they did like the Giants to make the wild card, which I agree with. Giants are one game into the wild card now in the National League, one game above the outside looking in portion of that. And the other one was they liked the Cubs to win both the division and the playoffs. That may yet happen. But the Rangers one was where they were way off. Rangers win because that ain't going to happen. Rangers now a game behind both the Astros and the Seattle Mariners in the AL West. I think that the Astros are the team sitting in the weeds. Like, if you ask the question, who do you think can really win the World Series? How many teams? I asked that of guests this week, and we'll ask that of Weingarten again. I think I might have asked Weingarten already, so I won't ask him again. But to me, it's three teams. It's the Braves, the Dodgers, and the Astros. And that's with knowing how absolutely fucked the baseball playoffs are compared to a 162-game regular season. Billy Beane, again, by saying, my shiz, he didn't use that word, though, doesn't work in the postseason. What he was trying to say was, I can analytics drive 162 games and overcome negative variance, but when it comes to postseason series, which are such small sample size, it's just a free-for-all. So I get that. And yet I still believe the Braves are so stacked that they are the team to beat. Like, could they lose a best-of-five series or a best-of-seven? Sure. But this just feels like the year where everybody's a pretender beyond the Braves, the Dodgers, and the Astros. The Braves, to beat the Astros as an exacta, we were doing football exactas earlier in the week, Kelly. The Braves to beat the Astros is 16-1.
Okay.
The Astros to beat the Braves is 18-1. Now, I know the Dodgers fans and Dodgers backers will have something to say about that because they're the third team. But you wouldn't make a bet on that right now, Braves to beat the Astros 16-1? Because if you would ask me without knowing the number, I would have guessed like 9-1.
Yeah.
I think I'd make that bet.
I still think there's some value betting them in the division. -115 right now. That's it.
On who?
On the Astros.
On the Astros. Oh, for sure. I still think that's bettable. Astros have done most of this without Alvarez and Altuve for much of the year. Laying in the weeds. 16-1, Braves to beat the Astros. 18-1 the other way. You might make that bet. Zach Cohen on the U.S. Open next. Numbers Game, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check the top VSiN experts leaderboard to view betting records, profit, and ROI, and see which VSiN expert has the hot hand for VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up today for only $19. That's 19 American dollars for your first month at vsin.com/subscribe. Every pick from every host, from every guest at the network, logged at vsin.com/picks. Great service on the website. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Jason Stark. Kelly should not have groaned at Nebraska-Minnesota. 13-10 score. He should have done what I did. Pound the under. had 43 pre-flop, added 37, then 24.5. Last one was the only sweat. Well, that's what we were saying, sort of the opposite with the UCF game. Again, college football. What's the greatest parlays line ever? College football. It is what it is. And there was it. That was all I kept thinking about last night. I was like, it is what it is. Might as well just keep betting this.
I didn't check into that game till the second quarter, and it was a thrilling 3-0.
You got to have the multi-box screen going.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had multiple TVs going, but that didn't make the cut.
That was a flex, ladies and gentlemen.
Ten games I could have given.
I've got multiple TVs going. Kelly Bidlin, producer number 9.
I had to watch the UCF blowout, okay? That was important.
Michael Burns jumped on Strider at plus 390. Have Snell at 60-1 and 40-1. Good for you, Michael Burns. Ooh. Good for you. Johnny Salad, are you concerned that the Braves will sit Strider his last 2 starts? Yeah, I said his last one for sure. I think they will sit him. Again, the only way he pitches throughout the rest of the regular season is if the Dodgers are like 1 game behind, because the Braves do want home field. Russell Smith, glad you mentioned the UConn announcing crew. That play-by-play guy was awful. Had to put it on mute in the first quarter for the rest of the game. God, it wasn't just me. Charles in Connecticut, I'm sad about Vincent leaving the South Point. I didn't realize my attachment till this week. I know Vegas is about to change, but visiting South Point will not be the same without Vincent. Thank you to South Point for supporting Vincent when it was new and helping it become what it is now. That's a beautiful tweet, Charles in Connecticut. And Buddhist Man reacting to the primetime action picture. Long live sports coach Guillermo Alejandro, he says. That's right. I used to dress up for that show, for God's sakes. Okay, now, we appreciate all the love on Twitter. We'll get to more later when Chrissy and Vinny are here. Let's talk some tennis. The U.S. Open has finished the first 2 rounds. A lot of chalk, almost exclusively chalk, got home yesterday. Split on my 2 bets again. Got the win with Michael Moe, Mighty Moe, over John Isner in John Isner's final match as a professional. And did not get home with Sasha Vickery, who again was up 4-3 in the third and deciding set with 2 break points. Couldn't get those done. And she ends up losing the match because it's just how it went. I do have one pick. Can I do my pick before we get to Zach Cohen? My one pick of the day is Dominic Stricker. Dominic Stricker is my one play of the day over Benjamin Bonzi. I got Stricker at minus 133 last night. Last I checked, it was like minus 138. Let me check what it is now. Don't play this over minus 140. Let's just say that. Let's just say that's the number. Don't play this over minus 140 if you're doing it right now. I know as I say that, most people are going to override that and be like, hey, it's minus 145. I'm playing it anyway. Stricker right now is minus 149. Oh. Once again, we've got CLV. Once again, who knows if it means a damn thing. Zach Cohen is with us to talk U.S. Open. He's VSiN senior editor and writer. You can follow him on Twitter at BettingOnX. How you doing, Zach?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing very well. What did you land on today, sir?
I have a few things. Once again, I'm back against some of the Americans, which is just a coincidence. I want to throw that out there. I don't, I'm not anti-America in any way. I did enjoy my time in London on my honeymoon.
I love that you have to put out this disclaimer every time. Like, we're like, he hates Americans, Zach Cohen. It's okay, Zach.
Well, there's nothing worse than betting against Americans at the U.S. Open. I have 3.
What did you end up with today?
So I'm going with Davidovich Fokina against Tommy Paul. I got some bad closing line value on it myself. I ended up playing it at plus 100 because I put it in yesterday. It's about plus 125 now. But I just think that there's not a lot that separates these two players. So I think that's a really good price on the Spaniard. I think he's been a lot more impressive than Paul has been at the U.S. Open. I think Tommy has struggled a little to reach that form we saw in Toronto and Cincinnati, which I think has something to do with the pressure of being, an American at the U.S. Open. And I also think that, he has a 2-0 record against Davidovich Fokina. But the last match that they played, ADF served really poorly, uncharacteristically poorly. I think he only made like 60% of his first serves. He's usually a guy that makes around 65%. And his serve has looked really good in the U.S. Open. And he's made the fourth round twice here. So, I mean, this is just an environment that he really likes. And I think he'll be kind of get up if the crowd is in Tommy's favor. That's something that we've seen him enjoy in the past.
Yeah, I have Tommy Paul to win the quarter, but I don't hate your bet. Like, I really wonder if this is one of those, because if you look at the hard court, the raw data, Davidovich Fokina's numbers are just as good as Tommy Paul's. So I don't hate your bet at all. And I'm wondering if I didn't have the future on Paul, if I would have joined you on this. I am not involved, but I hear what you're screaming on this one. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, and I looked at Paul's draw as well, because, you know, when you see this part of this section of the bracket, you know, you look to Paul and you look to Tiafoe, but I was a little bit nervous about this third round matchup, and I was a little bit nervous about Paul's potential fourth round matchup. So, yeah, that was where I got scared off a little bit.
What else did you play today?
I also have Aslan Karatsev at plus 130 against Ben Shelton, which is one where, you know, I came on here last time, I picked Dominic Thiem to beat Ben Shelton. But the reality is that I'm not really high on Shelton's overall game. I think that the serve is awesome. I think that's something that gets him a lot of free games, you know, really keeps him in matches. But Karatsev is a really underrated returner. He really flips the script. He puts, you know, a lot of balls back deep in the court and, you know, forces the opponent to answer a lot of questions. So I think Karatsev is a guy that is going to give Shelton a lot of trouble on his serve, which, you know, the American hasn't had to deal with a lot in his career. He's usually someone that can just boom that serve and people aren't going to have much resistance with it. And Karatsev is not going to give that to him. And I think that Karatsev has a really tricky baseline game. He hits really powerful, flat strokes. We saw him make the semifinals of the Australian Open 2 years ago. So he's a guy that definitely can make a run at majors. And I just think this is one that people are overlooking him a little bit.
What number did you get on Karatsev?
I put it in at plus 125, and I've seen it now floating at plus 130, plus 135.
I'm seeing plus 140 now. This was not a bet I was willing to make at plus 125, but like now it's getting ridiculous because, yeah, Ben Shelton shouldn't be minus 170 in this match. Let's just put it that way. He really shouldn't be.
No, and Karatsev's one where I saw this draw immediately, and I was like, man, I think if I can see him in the fourth round.
I have no idea why this is drifting. I mean, I was not involved, but I have no idea why this is drifting the way it is. At plus 140, man, I'd have to check my numbers here, but that might even be a bet. So I like that one as well. Would you have a third?
Yeah, and the third, I have Caroline Wozniacki minus 120 against Jen Brady. That was one where I just really think Wozniacki is just a lot more talented than the opponent. I thought Wozniacki looked awesome against Petra Kvitova. She broke her four times. Kvitova has the seventh highest hold percentage in the WTA, so that's one of the best servers on tour. So that says a lot about where Wozniacki's game is right now. And I think for someone that just came back from a lengthy layoff, her movement is so impressive. She's still playing some, you know, signature baseline defense, and I just think I really trust her moving forward. And I think that the sky is kind of the limit on what she can do if she, you know, commits to tennis these next couple of years.
Yeah, she's taking on Jen Brady. Wozniacki's a minus 127 favorite. Brady made the finals in the Australian Open, that same Australian Open that you referenced earlier, where Karatsev made the semifinals a few years back. That was a very odd sort of slam at the beginning. I want to say of 2021, no, probably 2020, I'm guessing. Don't hold me to that, but I believe that's when it was. But so you're taking Wozniacki in that one. I don't have a single play on the ladies' side today. I think all of those numbers for me are right about where they should be. And for those who are doing brain-dead moneyline parlays on this, boy, Yelena Ostapenko, did you see that match the other day that involved her? She was up a set, then she was up 5-2. She was just coasting home and somehow gacked that set and then just barely eked it out. So you never know with someone like her. She's a big, huge favorite over Bernarda Pera. I think she gets by easy. But you certainly do. Let's just put it this way. I wouldn't like race to put her in based on that last performance. Is there anything just from a macro perspective, because we've got to run here, but is there anything from a macro perspective that has changed your mind on anything at the top? Novak, Carlitos on the men's side, Iga on the ladies' side.
I think the only thing I would say is that if you do like Djokovic, which I personally think Alcaraz is going to win the tournament, but if you do like Djokovic, I wouldn't be scared off by the minus 105 price, because I don't think there's anybody that could beat him until he gets to the finals. And I think you're going to see minus 165-ish in that final match. So I think that if you're looking at that minus 105 and you think you can't take it now, I wouldn't be afraid of pulling the trigger if you do like Djokovic.
I co-sign on that. Absolutely. I mean, he got the greased draw of a lifetime. He really did. Whereas Carlos has a gauntlet to go through. So we'll see. Zach, a pleasure.
It's unbelievable.
Good luck with your bets. Enjoy, man.
Thank you.
Zach Cohen, everybody, at Betting on X, his new Twitter handle, Betting on X. Clever. Clever that he got one. College football on the way. Dr. Bob and the Bear, Chris Felica, back-to-back. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.